Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey, welcome to Our Altered World. If you've been feeling overwhelmed by the giant that is climate change, you're not alone. I'm Neil, and here we celebrate the inspiring work of individuals and organizations making real positive strides that you may not have heard about. My hope is for our conversations here to make you feel inspired and reconnected to our planet. And with that being said, I would love to introduce Dylan from Ecotone Renewables.
Hi, everyone, and thank you very much for having me, Neil. Excited for it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me and my audience today, Dylan. I am super excited to dive into all of the incredible work you've been doing. I'd love for you to just give my audience, you know, like a quick top-of-the-line summary of what it is that is Ecotone Renewables.
At a very, very high level, what we're doing is turning food waste into fertilizer. We do that in a really innovative way by deploying a fleet of autonomous biodigesters for all types of commercial buildings. So happy to dive more in, but kind of at the very highest level, that's
Yes, wow. No, that already sounds so incredible, doesn't it? Let's scale it back now. Come on. How did it come about with the founding of Ecotone? Like, how did the three of you go around from building to revolutionizing, you know, this food waste management?
I would say it was not a very clean and like simple path from the start. So
as life, started, right?
Yeah, exactly right. But yeah, we actually started as kind of a full team of different students from across three different universities, mostly based in Pittsburgh. So this was a bunch of students from Carnegie Mellon University, the University of Pittsburgh, and our very first CEO, Vin, from the University of Michigan as well. And so the team actually started by building Pittsburgh's first portable farm, which was an aquaponic system. So there was a fish tank on the bottom floor of a shipping container, greenhouse on top that was actually using all the fish waste to grow new plant produce. I joined that like initial team that was more of like a student club at that point back in 2017, a month or two after arriving in Pittsburgh and starting school there. And they were actually looking for a materials engineer because they were just starting to kind of recognize the small scale aquaponics really doesn't work well on the unit economics. It's like big upfront capital costs. And your main byproduct is like some leafy greens and herbs, which like, yes, you can bring some revenue in, but it's not enough to really pay off the equipment itself. Large scale aquaponics work super well. But I think what the team was then really exploring is like, what would it look like to actually solve one of the bigger pain points in our community, which is food waste and food deserts. So in Pittsburgh, we have a lot of food deserts. People don't have access to fresh produce. And we also have an immense amount of food waste that's going to landfills. And so that's really where they first started reaching out, being like, we think this might be a biodigester. We're trying to figure out what to do with the biogas byproduct that's being produced. So that's kind of initially where I was brought onto the team.
Yeah,
it was really exciting to see.
I love that you guys are already like thinking ahead. You're like, it's not working in this capacity, but we see this. We see there's so much potential here in all these other little avenues. I love that.
Exactly. And I think what stayed constant was the form factor. We realized this idea of a shipping container makes it super mobile. It's really adaptable. And you can kind of like build and access them very easily as well. So that's really when we started actually refining a solution, building a technology. I was more leading kind of the technology development of the company when we first officially founded in 2019. So I was CTO for the first 3 years and then officially came the CEO in 2022. So been
wow,
leading
fresh
the company.
Out of university as well. That's so much going on for you.
Yeah. So on top of all that, I was doing basically a combined bachelor's and master's degree program at CMU. So I was studying materials engineering right up my alley, although most of my schoolwork was around steel because it's Pittsburgh. But the material I'm most interested on is really around food waste and how we can kind of capture those otherwise wasted nutrients and put them back into the food system.
So right now with Ecotone, there's three of you from that original program that have now sprouted out to formulate what is Ecotone as a business. Now, the name Ecotone, what was the inspiration behind that? And how did it, you know, reflect your mission?
Great question. So for anyone that's not familiar, an ecotone is actually a type of habitat. So it's actually an interconnector point. So if you think of a sandy beach and a jungle forest, there's this kind of brushy area in between that connects the two, which is called an ecotone.
Okay, so that's like the connector. That's what I'm getting.
Exactly right. And so for us, it's really connecting people back with the food system, back with nature. And we're mostly deploying these systems and our solutions in urban environments. And so that's really where we see an opportunity of like, instead of throwing your food waste away and never seeing it again, you can actually see that in your local community being turned into valuable byproducts and fertilizers. So kind of that reconnecting point is kind of where the first name came from. We did a bunch of like surveys, customer discoveries of a few different variations of the name. And our,
what was
our
the
very
close
early
second?
Supporters. What was that?
I would love to, what was the close second?
I can't remember what the second one was, but I remember we had like circularity all
okay,
in there as
yes,
well.
Yes.
That was even
no,
before.
No, I think
like,
yeah, you settled on the right one. I feel
I
like
so
that's a
well.
Really nice merger, and it makes you think as well. So you've kind of alluded to this already. You know, we're talking about food waste, and you know, globally, food waste accounts for about 8 to 10% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. You know, we're talking twice this of aviation. You know, half the time you think, oh, like the big emitters are planes and stuff. Well, in reality, globally, we're contributing a lot to that. Can you walk us through how Ecotone addresses this, you know, like through your products, you know, this massive environmental challenge? Talk me through what I found out was called Zeus.
Yeah, definitely. And you're exactly right. Food waste is one of our biggest levers in reducing the impact of greenhouse gas emissions and global climate change. What we've developed is an on-site automated biodigester that basically upcycles food waste for commercial buildings. So think an office space, a K-12 school, university, hospital, restaurant, all of the above. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really where we were seeing a gap in the market. So you have, anyone's familiar, the formal term of what we're building is an anaerobic digester. So it works very similar to our stomach or a cow's stomach, where you're grinding up the food waste. It goes through multiple stomach tanks and then produces the farts or the biogas that we capture and use, and then the liquid fertilizer product that's being produced as well that we resell. And so really what we were seeing is there's these very large scale anaerobic digesters. Germany is actually one of the most advanced markets in this space, where these are like big $50 million systems that process food waste for an entire like town or city. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have like really tiny home size systems, whether it's something as simple as like a worm bin or a compost tumbler. There's some more like high tech solutions like Mill and Lomi as well, which I think are more like dehydrating the food waste. And I think really what we saw was there is a gap in these mid-sized scaled systems that are actually for like a building and facility. So mm-hmm. that was kind of the first innovation, is actually the size and capacity matching where we saw a real gap in the market, where a lot of these businesses today are throwing food waste in the trash and sending it to landfill because it's the cheapest option. So I think what we've been able to show them is there's actually a cheaper, more cost-effective option that, by the way, is the best thing you can do with your food waste for the environment. So that's really kind of the core of our business, is processing food waste, saving our partners money on waste hauling bills, and then we actually resell the fertilizer and have built a profit-sharing model back to the customers so they can actually see
yes,
their food waste.
I think we're talking cascade of effects right now. You know, we've just spoke about the topic of, you know, reducing this landfill waste, and monetary-wise, you're talking about a benefit to the system is providing to these businesses. You know, aside from that, like, what was the compelling factor that you went to these businesses and said, hey, this is what we're building and this is how we'd like to utilize, you know, your food waste into our product? And walk us through kind of like what those conversations were like. You know, let's say people are inspired here to connect with businesses in ways that they can benefit them and the environment. What was it that instigated those conversations, or what really led to success there for you?
Yeah, I would say it's actually usually operational pain points. Mm-hmm. And it's really around reliability. So when you have a waste hauler, whether it's to haul your waste to a landfill, to haul it to a compost facility, which is obviously better, there's still a lot of operational challenges with that. There's a huge snowstorm or a power outage, you might get a missed pickup. And I think those missed pickups, odor and pest issues were really like the key pain points for our customers that we're able to solve for them. So you now have an on-site solution. You dump your waste right in the trash chute. There are no haulers. There is no traveling of the waste. And so that reliability factor is something we very much have been able to solve for. And the pest and odor, especially in the summer months, is a really big pain point, especially for hospitals, you can think. School as well, that's a big risk for any sort of like vectors or animals getting in. So being able to have like an airtight, watertight system that handles all of your food waste instead of just throwing your food waste in an open air dumpster where anything can get it has been really helpful operationally for them. So I think that's kind of the core piece, is like, can we solve something that's an actual pain point for them? And then, by the way, this can actually be like a net cost saver for their business as well. And that's really what helps them actually kind of push things across the line and get all the signatures they need.
Yes, I love that. It's really like a thought through process of, you know, being both mutually beneficial, but also like tactfully thinking about how you can get these organizations onboarded. You know, when we're looking at Zeus, and I was looking at these images, you know, these units, they're housed in very colorfully painted shipping containers.
Yeah.
And then they're fully automated. I would love for you to kind of walk us through, you know, this biomimicry approach that you've gone about.
Definitely. Yeah. And you're exactly right. This is a form of biomimicry. So for us, it's basically mimicking the process of a stomach. For our system, it's all housed in a 20-foot shipping container. I also have everything converted to metric, as we've now shifted over and expanded into Canada as well. But really,
and where are these shipping containers? You know, let's paint a picture in the listener's mind.
Yeah, so we're coast to coast in the US right now. And so far, we've seen two different types of deployments. Some are kind of front of house of the building and facility.
So just as you're walking in, you're seeing this massive, like, bright shipping container.
Exactly, yeah. And then we do have others that do it more back of house, like right near the back kitchen door, just for mm-hmm. ease of their kind of kitchen and janitorial staff. And you're exactly right. So we always hire a local artist, or our customer can also paint it if they want, which a lot of schools do.
That's fun.
Actually paint and do murals on the outside of the...
Did that answer your question? Yes, no, it did. Yeah, okay. That's just very beautiful. You know, when it comes to your engineering innovation, and also we're talking about, you know, these behavioral changes, getting these businesses and schools and universities to look at different ways that they can utilize their waste. What kind of insights did you gain about, you know, the businesses and the communities then responding to these on-site waste processes? Because like you've just mentioned that, you know, some of these places, they have these shipping containers just as you walk in, which is a very interesting, I'd say interesting instead of odd concept, because I love what you're doing. But to some people, you might think, oh, you've got a waste processing site right at your front door. How do you, you know, deal with these innovations and behavioral change?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I've noticed is like people are looking for transparency nowadays. We're like constantly surrounded by so much noise. We're not sure what's true or AI fabricated at this point online. And I think especially when people are looking at waste, if they're trying to do the right thing, let's say they're partnering with a compost hauler, a lot of the time, they have no clue where that's actually going. So they've never seen where this is actually traveled to. Is this going to a composting facility? Is it to a large-scale AD system? Is it somewhere else?
Yeah. And so it's like a recycling system. It's like you think it just vanishes, but then in reality, there's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. And so I think that's something I've noticed people really love about being able to see like a physical system on site. It's like, no, we're not just doing the right thing, but like we can see it happening right there. Like this isn't just like disappearing. We think the right thing's happening. Like we know what's happening. We can show
and
you
with
right
these with these learnings and with these insights, how has this, you know, changed the way that, let's say, how you started operating in 2019, 2020 compared to now? How have you changed and adapted with these learnings?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we really first built a product and technology. We kind of did the reverse of what you're supposed to do as a startup, is like find a problem and then build a solution. We kind of
understand the consumer, figure out what they need. It's like, no, I'm just going to make something up and it's going to work. You guys are going to use this.
Exactly. So that's kind of how we started. We like built
it's working, right?
Exactly. But that did make kind of force us to iterate really, really quickly. So that was kind of the big thing that I pushed for the company is like, yes, we built this first version. Now let's deploy it, send it out in the field, see what people say, build a better version, and now build 5 more of those. So we've done that really effectively. We're now on to version 4 of our Zeus Digester that we're deploying. We just finished designing version 5. So pretty much about like once a year, every other year, we're basically releasing kind of a newer, better, faster model of it. So I think that's been one of the keys, is making sure we're kind of iterating really quickly on the actual system. And the real key of that is actually then making sure we're solving like customer needs. So I think one really good example is we actually deployed one of our digesters for a senior center in Pittsburgh. And we used to have in our very first Zeus digester, basically like a little staircase that went up that you dump your food waste in a trash chute kind of at an elevated way, so that everything was basically gravity fed inside the box. But as soon as we deployed a system, or we're planning to for the senior center, we're like, we cannot force people to go upstairs. Like that's a liability risk. It's like a health concern. So that's also when we shifted everything to be like ADA compliant, ground floor, very low, where you can very easily just dump your food waste right in and walk away. And that's been like an amazing design change we've since kept in all of our future models. So I think that's like one example of a key learning of like, let's get these out in the field and learn as quickly as we can how we make this an easier and better solution for our customers.
Incredible. And on that note, I'm going to leave you guys thinking about your contribution to food waste and how much you know about the systems around you. And we're going to take our first break to hear from our station sponsors, and we'll be back soon.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Dylan from Ecotone Renewables. We have just left off on Dylan explaining the incredible process that it took from university to now of establishing an incredible business that is focused around utilizing our food waste, and how his learnings have adapted year on year, product by product. Now let's jump into that technology bit that we just left off on before the break. You know, you're focusing not just only on what's going in, but, you know, what's coming out. So your technology captures methane, for example. How would that otherwise escape as a greenhouse gas? And how are you converting it into renewable energy to, you know, power the system?
Yeah, great question. And also it kind of answers that initial question you asked about the impact of food waste.
Not me answering my own question. Oh, God, that's what I'm here for.
But yeah, the methane from food waste rotting, wherever it is actually really that biggest contributor to the 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions that food waste is emitting. So instead of just releasing that out into the atmosphere, we're actually scrubbing and able to use that biogas to basically usually heat water. We've tried some retrofitted generators, but they're a bit noisy. So there's a few different use cases for that biogas within the system. Anything to make sure that it's not just getting released like it typically is in landfills. What's exciting to see in this space, not just with our Zeus digester, but kind of across the food waste landscape, is people are starting to realize this biogas and methane like is a useful and valuable byproduct. So even landfills across the US, across the world, are actually starting to capture this methane instead of just releasing that into the atmosphere, which is great. These are like huge facilities that have some of the biggest impact in the world. So it's something that we're doing, but it's something we're also seeing is happening kind of across the food waste landscape as well.
You know, we've been talking about scale a lot and, you know, the variety of kind of like the capacity that you can work in compared to some of these organizations in Germany. You know, for listeners who are inspired, you know, to reduce their food waste and like what practical steps can individuals or even small businesses take without access to, let's say, a unit like Zeus that's near them?
Yeah, I think it follows the very simple kind of thesis of reduce, reuse, recycle. So I see like the Zeus digester, what we're doing with capturing food waste, we're actually at the very bottom of the totem pole. So we're for like whatever you can't reuse, whatever you can't otherwise use or distribute, we're there to sustainably process that waste. So a really good example is actually working with like local food banks and food redistribution organizations as well, because that's where you're able to actually just redistribute the food waste or the food that's still good quality, it's still edible, and avoid it being wasted. So I think that's one great example, whether it's volunteering with a local food bank, donating your food or cans that you know you're not going to eat anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I think one way to reuse food waste is actually freezing and doing veggie stocks is kind of my favorite one. So if you think of like your onion peels, your like leftover ends of vegetables, just have a little Ziploc bag in the freezer, throw them all in as you cook. Once a month, put it in a big pan or a big pot, make a nice veggie stock, especially as it starts getting cold out. And that's kind of the base for all of your soups. So you obviously still want to ideally be able to like compost those wastes or do something else afterwards. But that's a really great way.
Yeah, you're already just trying to drag out all of the use of everything that you already have. I love that.
Exactly.
Talking about dragging out use, we've so far spoken about the stuff that's going in, and we've spoken about, you know, the gases that are coming out. But you guys are utilizing the food waste to also make a fertilizer. So you have something called soil source. Now, before we jump into that, let's talk about what is soil sauce.
Soil sauce is a liquid organic fertilizer. So this is actually a direct byproduct from our Zeus digester, and it's actually our biggest focus. So that's one of the key differentiators between us and a lot of other big anaerobic digesters or other systems, is most of them are actually producing primarily biogas, and they're not really doing anything with what's called the digest state. That's the liquid that comes out of the system. We're kind of the opposite, where we want to capture all types of food waste, varying feedstocks, quantities, all of the above.
Yeah.
So we're still producing a biogas, but we're actually much more focused on the quality and consistency of the fertilizer coming out. So this is, again, like a very microbe-heavy liquid fertilizer. It's used mostly for like houseplants, backyard gardens, and we've done some extensive field trials with corn, soy, and
potatoes.
But
you guys are sold, I think, over 50 retailers now. So, and used by local farmers as well. So, you know, when it comes to things like farming, for example, there's a lot of certifications and stuff that you have to go through. How do you ensure that, you know, this waste-derived product meets things like organic certification standards?
Yeah, great question. And the organic certification process is a very long process. First of all, let me know if anyone needs help with it. Really, it primarily is defining like naturally derived products. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the core of an organic fertilizer, is it means it's being naturally produced. There's a bunch of different ways to do that. Bat guano is a good example. Compost teas are another example, which is actually pretty comparable to soil sauce. And the non-organic fertilizers are synthetically produced. So they're doing chemical processes to basically produce like very high nitrogen content fertilizers. And that's actually where we see a lot of like the core issues of like agricultural runoff into our waterways coming from. Mm. Is it's people using like really high nitrogen, usually granular fertilizers, dumping it on the fields. And some of that gets washed away into our waterways, which causes a whole lot of environmental issues like algae blooms and kind of toxic waterways as well. So besides producing a natural product, we're also able to help reduce some of that nitrogen runoff as well.
Incredible. You know, I just want to bring it back to the unit itself, you know, at the moment. I think you've deployed about 12 of these units across like Pennsylvania.
Up to 13
and
now. It's been a busy few weeks.
Incredible. So, you know, I think I was reading you've got planned for about 20 by the end of the year, right? How can you share like with this level of growth, there must be so many stories from clients that have had like, you know, transformations with the use of the units. Could you tell us a story from a client, you know, whether it's like a hospital or a university?
Yeah, definitely. I think great example in Pittsburgh with one of us, our office partners, is reducing their waste hauling costs by actually about 50%, which was higher than we expected they could. Usually it's around like 30 to 40%. And so that was really exciting to see. They reduced kind of frequency of pickup, size of their dumpster, and that enabled
And this
them,
has again, knock-on effects as well, because you've got to think about all of these pickups, their emissions, all of that. You know, it's got cascades of effects. It's incredible. 50%, that's huge.
Exactly right. So that was really exciting to see, because many people are like getting extra dumpster pickups just because there's food waste in there that smells and they don't want to leave it for a full week.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the most exciting examples. I think another is with a K-12 school and a university that we've been partnered with that actually use the soil sauce on site. And one of the K-12 schools actually has a focus on entrepreneurship. So they basically have students selling the soil sauce retail products, almost like lemonade stands. So kind of like,
wow, that's so funny.
Training, creating their own like business skills. So that was really exciting to see as well, as like, not just effective use of like inputting your food waste, but also really exciting use cases for the soil sauce.
I love that for the school though, because I remember I was trying to be like an entrepreneur in like my playground when I was like 11, and I got told off for it. I was like berated at the fact that I was like taking money like off fellow students, and I was like, well, they gave it to me for a product. That's their business.
Yep.
No, I love that they're investing in these kids and showing them that, you know, finance as well doesn't have to be directly a negative impact to the planet, and it can be contributing positively. You know, when it comes to the deployment of your technology, you've been targeting things like the hospitality and food service industries. How do you, with these partners and the companies like, you know, Compass Group in Canada, how do you see your impact scaling internationally, whether that's with you or through, you know, external partners that are using like your version of the product?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two core ways that we're doing that. The first is through our own work and team. So that's with our team going out into the market, reaching out to people, sending emails, making phone calls, to really have like one-on-one discovery conversations to understand like, do they have any operational pain points? Can we help solve them? I think the second piece is with those channel partners. So whether they're big food service providers, other waste haulers, composting businesses as well, people that want to layer in additional product offerings and servicing to increase their own revenue streams. So I think long term, those channel partners...
With these companies and with these partners, what common like misconceptions about, you know, this anaerobic digestion or waste to energy systems have you encountered? And, you know, do you find like your Zeus's approach automatically addresses these concerns, or is there, you know, some sort of conversations that you need that need to be had?
Yeah, great question. And that there definitely are concerns around anaerobic digesters, or commonly called AD systems. And they have a pretty bad rep in the market today. And I think that comes from a lot of people over the past 10 years trying to basically like buy these systems from manufacturers. System breaks in a few months or a year, and no one's there to help them fix it. So it's a really big pain point for them, where people have like,
so now
tried
they
these
have
systems before.
No waste outlet. They've buried money into this system, and it's also just sitting there doing nothing, which can be very frustrating.
Exactly right. So that's, I think, led to a lot of kind of bad press and kind of representation in the market.
Do you think these have negative knock-on effects operational-wise within a business? Because I think about this, you know, sometimes let's say a business is stretching out to try and make more environmentally conscious decisions or more environmentally conscious business partnerships or movements in those directions. And then they go south or they don't have the same results that they're looking to achieve. And then as a result, they reduce the scale of investment that they're looking to continue with in those directions.
I think so, yeah. I think definitely if a company is like trying to be innovative, doing something new, and it doesn't go well, like that's definitely not going to lead to them doubling down on continuing to innovate.
Did you ever have that with any of the people that you have worked with or had conversations with where they had done a similar thing a couple of years ago, it hadn't worked, and now you've come along and...
We have. So there's definitely been at least like two or three that have like bought a digestion system. It broke after a year or two, and then they basically like never fixed it or knew what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And what were those
emails like? They're like, we've already done this. And you're like, well, actually, we manage it for you. Like, we're still here. It's not
We've even offered to repair them, even though they're not our systems. Like, we have an amazing team of engineers. Okay. Like, they'll figure it out if they wanted them to.
With the, you know, like, repairing of these systems, do you then onboard, do you like convert them into a Zeus system, or do you just do repair for the company? It's like, even though it's a set product separate from your company,
we have yet to actually do that, so I'll keep you updated when we do. Okay. No one's taken us up on that offer yet.
I'm gonna see it online and I'm gonna just be like, oh, he took my idea, I see.
But yeah, it's been interesting to see and hear that in the marketplace. I think really how we've addressed it is we've actually created kind of a leasing model for our digester that's very similar to a car lease for our customers that bundles in us operating, maintaining, and repairing the equipment for them.
Yes.
So it's kind of everything.
I love how much you guys have, you know, thought out, not just on a technological scale, but the business scale of everything as well. It's I think it's very insightful. You've, as you mentioned earlier, you kind of built the product first and then looked into the market to see if there was a consumer for it. But from my side, at this point in time, it was like, wow, this seems like really fully fledged out to see as something like, you know, working cohesively. Your company that Ecotone Renewables, it's a public benefit corporation. You're balancing, you know, both profitability of having a functional company with being purposeful. Now, how does, you know, your structure help you stay committed to, you know, your environmental impact mission and desires despite the counteractive problem of having business pressures?
Yeah, I think public benefit corporations are really one of the best ways to solve for building a long-term sustainable business while protecting the board and the executive officers. And really how that functions, to give you a little bit more detail, is typically all the companies that you see out in the world are kind of general C corps. So legally, their like operating business, their governance team is held to one metric. It is like revenue, bottom line, and like shareholder profits, which are important. Like those are the key metrics that keeps a business alive and growing really well. But a real risk there, and really what a public benefit corporation is solved for, is that's a triple bottom line. So yes, you're still solving for revenue, bottom line, and shareholder profits, but you're also equally solving for positive social benefits and positive environmental benefits. So really what that does is it actually protects the management team for making the right decision. I think a great example is, let's say we found a component for our Zeus digester that is 10% more expensive, but it's completely upcycled. It's a really sustainable like subcomponent that we can use. Like we can easily make that choice, move on, and there aren't any issues. But if you're a standard C corp and you're making that decision, a shareholder, like it's not necessarily that they're going to win, but they could potentially sue you for like not meeting your what's called fiduciary duties to the business. So I think that's what I've seen is like a really powerful tool for public benefit corps. Right now, they're taxed as standard C corps. There's like no real incentives to do it. Not many companies are public benefit corps, but I think they are starting to grow, which is exciting to see. So it's a really kind of standardized business model because, again, it's usually operates like a standard C corp. But I see it as one of the best ways for us to be making sure that like new businesses that come into the market and are growing and scaling are actually building a better world instead of just consuming a bunch of resources, producing a bunch of products that are thrown out and calling it a day.
Incredible. And on that note, we'll be right back after this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Our Altered World. I'm here with Dylan from Ecotone Renewables. Me and Dylan just left off on what was a very interesting topic, talking about, you know, being a public benefit corporation as Ecotone Renewables is. Now, as a corporation, you know, there's a lot of policy that you have to kind of dig through as well. With a lot of changes in federal environmental policy in the States at the moment, what kind of gives you hope for a future of clean tech innovation and, you know, both in line with private sector leadership and sustainability?
Yeah, I think what is really exciting to see for our business and many others is the sustainable products are actually the more reliable, the better, and the cheaper options out in the market. And I think that even as we see our federal government dismantling a lot of environmental protections, incentives, all of the above, businesses are actually still choosing those options, whether it's on energy sources, on how they're processing waste, how they're procuring different products. I think what's the most exciting is this isn't like you have to pay more to do the right thing. It's actually here's an option that is a much more sustainable long-term option that actually makes better business sense for your company. So I think that's what's exciting to me is like, we're not yet relying and we no longer need to rely on all of these like different programs. We're at this stage in the world right now where it's more about like scaling these sustainable solutions and just delivering well on.
Now, when it comes to all of these changes that have happened recently within policy, has your company been affected by any of them?
Not particularly. I think the biggest one is on one of the market segments that we're really closely working with, which is universities. So we work with about like 7 different market verticals across like municipalities, restaurants, K-12, higher ed, hospitals, offices, apartment buildings, kind of anything you can imagine.
The list is ongoing.
It is very long. But one of those, which has really been like our earliest partners, is higher ed and universities, is they are all really struggling right now in the U.S. on the budget side. We have like pretty difficult and awful like visa processes today where it's really difficult for international students to actually join, which is usually a big portion of an operating budget for universities, especially for their graduate programs. We're also seeing research cuts across the board. So I think across the board, universities have like definitely been struggling the past like 9-10 months or so on the budgeting side. So again, I think positioning us as a cost saver is like how we've continued to work with them. But I think that's something we're going to see continue to happen over the next few years under this administration.
Okay. Very interesting food for thought. Now, let's bring it back to the founding of Ecotone. What has been your proudest milestone, you know, since the founding of the company to now, you know, whether that's to do with like specific waste diversion or funding? Talk us through that.
I think it's like every recent digester deployment for me. It's exciting to see when we get like big public recognition for our work and news articles coming out. But it's
is
actually
it like a consistent like physical representation like of your work that you see in front of you. Like that's
exactly
what I'm gauging
it's like,
from.
Yeah, we did it again. Like it happened. And I think like every time it happens, it's like smoother and smoother. I'm no longer even going to the deployments right away. I have like the rest of the team's crushing it. They're coordinating warehouse pickup, deliveries, installation, operating training. So it's kind of seeing that like not just that we built this product, but we've now also built an incredible team that is able to actually like do this from start to finish on their own. So I think that's kind of been proudest moment so far.
You're talking a lot about your team. Like, what does that look like now?
We're about a dozen full-time employees at Ecotone. So that's been exciting to see across sales, operation, engineering, manufacturing. Mm. So teams continuing to grow, but I think something we've been really focused on is very much like an early career team. is also really growing and developing ourselves. So creating kind of different tools, development programs that we can kind of train up our own capabilities and competencies at the same time.
You know, speaking of these, you know, capabilities, these competencies, you're with your work, you have so many of these different partners and they all embody, you know, sort of different things. With these on-site food waste processing, like when it comes to local ecosystems, is there anything that you can share with us, you know, like a story of a client that really has benefited not only as a company but like for the wider reach it has? Please let me know if I described that terribly, but I was kind of just running with the train of thought I had there.
Yeah, I think I understood what you're asking for, and I think one really strong example of that is in Pittsburgh, our partnership with the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank and 412 Food Rescue. So these are two local amazing nonprofit organizations that are really focused on reducing food waste at the source. So they're capturing food while it's still edible, redistributing it to communities in need, a lot of the time in food deserts where they don't have access to fresh produce. And then any food waste that they can't sustainably distribute or get kind of handed off or processed, we're kind of that safety net to help process that food waste sustainably. So we've had a few different form factors of that partnership over time. The food bank was actually our very first partner and customer with our Swissvale deployment, which was amazing to see. And 412 Food Rescue was actually also using that same site to park their like big transportation trucks as well, which are used to kind of transport food across the city. So I think that was like one of the most exciting partnerships that I've seen, that this is like all within one city. You have three amazing organizations focused on reducing food waste, but doing it in really different ways and kind of all together at the same time.
You know, when it comes to the food waste, you guys came into it very technologically heavy, but what unexpected findings throughout the course of your time with the company has surprised you the most?
I think maybe one of the biggest surprisings is actually the data piece of it all. So we built this like big system to process all the food waste, but very early on we started to realize like people not just want to know that their waste is processed right there, they actually want to know like how much and when. Like what type of food waste was thrown out? Was it tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, coffee grounds?
All of a sudden they want
chicken.
All the metrics.
Exactly. They want to know like how much carbon did they divert through that system? What exactly were they wasting? How many pounds of it was it? So we're pretty easily able to integrate that inside the box as well for all of that kind of post-consumer waste that ends up in the system. It also does handle all of like the kitchen scraps for backup house as well. So I think that was kind of one of the most surprising earlier findings, is the importance and kind of value of that data piece. Because the bigger piece of the pie for all these businesses is their food purchasing costs. So if you're able to help reduce those even a few percentage points, that has a huge impact on their bottom line as a business.
Do you ever think of kind of, you know, expanding that outward? For example, let's say you've got like three businesses within like a certain sector of the city, and you see them all in their food waste as like loads of peppers or like red peppers or something, and you think, oh, okay, I should tell other food sourcing around us to like start stocking up more red peppers because they're being bought, but don't buy as much of the other pepper. I don't know, I'm just like imagining this sort of like chain reaction in my head. Let's bring it back to the business. You know, looking ahead, your goal is is to have something about, let's say, 10,000 systems deployed globally. How do you envision, you know, Zeus technology reshaping food management in cities worldwide over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years?
I think the real key is like the mobility and quick like implementation of these systems, because we have across the world large landfills, large composting facilities, large AD systems.
And we have shipping containers.
Exactly. But we don't have enough actual capacity for processing food waste. And launching these new, like really large centralized facilities is important. And we still need to do that, but it's really slow. Like getting permitting, financing, approval, then actually building and operating a huge centralized composting facility or an anaerobic digestion facility takes like 5 years.
Comparatively, on that note, how many would you say scale in comparison to a large food processing facility? How, like, let's say, how many Zeus units would equate to one big one?
There's a huge range of the big ones. So there's not one size of them. Some are completely massive.
Let's look at one that do food management for a large sector of a city.
I would say maybe like 100 Zeus digesters is probably a good equivalent for that. So Zeus digester processes around 12 tons of food waste a year. So actually being able to process over like 1,000 tons of food waste a year, I think is probably like maybe a mid-sized scale processing facility. There's definitely larger ones out there too.
Do you guys ever think about, you know, partnering with construction companies that are, you know, building blocks of flats, for example, blocks of apartments, by having this centralized, you know, Zeus facility, like potentially like on their rooftop or within their basement where it's on site and you know that they're going to be continually distributed throughout their constructions citywide, statewide, internationally?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's actually been a lot of the outreach I've personally been doing is to kind of property developers and managers and creating some partnerships with them.
Yeah. Because I can definitely see that, you know, like panning out, you know, being, we've spoken a lot about that mutual benefit. And that would apply well as well, you know, to like the people listening here today. They might live in flats, they might live in apartments where they think, oh, hey, like that could work in my building. Why do we not have that? You know, that'd be great.
Exactly.
You know, when it comes, I just want to, one of these ideas about soil source, you know, you've boosted plant growth. That's what I said, like up to 30% compared to traditional fertilizers. This is what you're saying on your website. Now, regenerative agriculture is a big thing globally. Now, what role do you see this playing, you know, in both like climate change and food security?
I think there's a huge impact of it. And in terms of regenerative agriculture specifically, one of the biggest pieces of that is actually that transition time between, let's say, more conventional agriculture that you're growing towards switching to more regenerative practices. And it usually takes a few years, sometimes upwards of like 3 to 5 years to like properly build up the soil health, the topsoil, all of the nutrients in it, and then all of the plants and kind of arrangement of them as well. So I think where we kind of play in that space is really on kind of speeding up that timeline. So instead of taking 3 years to build up your soil health, to actually have more regenerative practices and not need so many kind of additives throughout the year, you can actually use soil sauce to basically like boost your soil health much faster than that. So maybe
and regenerative
3 years down a line.
Agriculture, regenerative doesn't always have to be at scale. You know, sometimes that's you're growing tomatoes or you're growing peppers in your home.
Exactly.
And you might get 2 to 3 batches out and then all of a sudden the plants died off, you know? Soil source, for example, this is a consumer purchasable product as well. They can buy this and they can use it to help invigorate their soil to have more food retention. You know,
exactly.
Where can people learn more about EcoTone Renewables or purchase soil source?
Easily on our website. That's just ecotonerenewables.com. We're on socials as well at EcoTone Renew, mostly on Instagram and LinkedIn, I would say. So those would, I would say, be like the three best resources to check out.
Fantastic. And Dylan, what is your final message of hope for building a world without, you know, food waste? And how can listeners join this movement towards, you know, circular economy solutions?
I would say just take it one step at a time. We're not going to solve everything in a single day, but we can all individually and together make a really large impact if every single day we try to do one little thing to help kind of reduce and recycle and reuse any sort of food waste or any other types of waste that we're producing. So whether it's bringing some reusable bags to the grocery store, whether it is putting your food waste in a freezer bag and then starting to make some stocks, trying to get a biodigester at your apartment building or your office is another one, but that's a much bigger one. So I would say like, hope is not lost. We have plenty of more work to do, but we have, besides EcoTone, some amazing organizations out there that are also solving this really large issue of food waste. So it's going to be a lot of us working together to really create that global impact.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Dylan. And thank you all for listening to Our Altered World today. If you enjoyed the show, I'd love for you to visit our website, ouralteredworld.com, where you can join our community and find more information on upcoming shows. You can also find some of my work on social media at Flunking Monkey, FLUNKINGMONKEY. And until next time, I hope you all have a great day.